life work and so forth. And I just hope it blesses us all. I hope it gets our minds thinking and our hearts flowing as far as, you know, doing something to be engaged in trying to save the unborn. So amen. This is Marina Warbington. Stand right here, would you?
You can't see me.
I know.
This is funny. Like,
I'm
going to be walking back and forth. Can we move it back?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's even better.
Okay. Is that good?
Yes. That's why I wore heels, but I should have worn taller heels.
I told her dad, Donna, I was going to take a chair and put it up here for Stana, but then I really think she's like 6'2 and playing basketball. So anyway.
All right. Thank you. Can you guys hear me? I think I turned this on. I have a loud voice anyway. Yeah, I turned it on. Okay. All right, perfect. Well, like he said, I live in Ohio now. I work for Created Equal full-time. Like Mike said, I went down there for a spring break trip for a week. We do this thing called the Justice Ride where we take high school and college students to Florida with us. We train them on how to have conversations about abortion, and then we bring them onto some of the largest campuses in Florida and have them have conversations with college students, like with us helping them. So I went down in the beginning of 2020, right before COVID hit, to do that. And then I signed up for a summer internship on that trip. And I was like, oh, you know what, 2 months of my life, not super bad. And then I did the summer internship, and then I did the 9-month gap year internship. And then one thing led to another. And now I live there full time and I'm on staff. And I've been full time staff since May. So first, I want to just introduce Created Equal. This is our staff, not including 3 of our gap year interns. They weren't in our pictures this year, so they're not pictured, but our group exists to expose the reality of abortion by pairing the victims of abortion with respectful dialogue, and we do this in a variety of ways, mainly outreach on college campuses, outside of high schools during their let-out time, outside of abortion clinics, and also just downtown areas like downtown Columbus. We've been in downtown Detroit. We travel a lot. I just got back on Thursday from being in D.C., for the opening arguments for the Dobbs v. Jackson case that the Supreme Court is hearing. And we're going to have to wait till summer to hear their vote. But we were able to be outside of the Supreme Court representing the victims of abortion during their entire rally. Quite a crazy experience. There was a lot of people there, but it went well. We also want to train up the next generation. So we do a lot of stuff with high school and college students, trying to get them involved in this movement more, because we want to train up the next generation to take on the culture of death and win, because we know that taking on the culture is how the killing is going to stop. So our president really focuses on outreach. He's up there in the top left. He started Create Equal because he knows that whether or not abortion is banned in the United States, there's still going to be people who support it. So we want to expose the reality of abortion to those people and change hearts and minds one at a time. This is kind of a glimpse of what outreach looks like for us. The picture on the left was a mob that I had that we did an open mic with at University of Cincinnati. We had over 200 students surrounding us, and we had one microphone talking on it. We had a second microphone that we let students ask us questions on, and then we would answer back on the other microphone. So this is just a way that we engage a larger group of students. This is one of the crazier groups we've had. There was a lot of yelling and shouting at us, but we were able to answer some of their questions. And then the picture on the right is me talking to someone at a different campus. That's how most of our outreaches look like. It's just one-on-one conversation. We ask people walking by, what are your thoughts on abortion? And then our conversation goes from there. Baby on the left, we call him Baby Jake. We met his mom outside of Planned Parenthood last year. She was raped and found out she was pregnant and was at Planned Parenthood for her first appointment. And my coworker talked to her, and she went to the pregnancy care center that's right across the street from Planned Parenthood, got an ultrasound, and when she came back out, she said she couldn't go through with her abortion and she was going to keep her baby. And he was born in October. So that's, we call him Baby Jake. I don't know his name, but super cute. And then the mom on the right is Micah. We met her outside of Planned Parenthood as well. She has, I think, 2 children already. She found out she was pregnant and was at the clinic for her abortion appointment. Before she went in, we were able to talk to her, and she went to the pregnancy care center right next door, got an ultrasound, and decided that she couldn't go through with it. We did a fundraiser for her. We raised over $10,000 for our pregnant mom fund, and we were able to buy her a new washer and dryer, pay for gas for her car, and different school supplies for her other children who were going to be starting school and didn't have things that they needed. So we were able to help her in that way. So while we want to change people's minds on abortion, we also want to partner with moms outside of Planned Parenthood that choose life for their babies, because we know that there are reasons that they're there, and we want to be able to meet them where they're at. And we also want to prove that we don't just care about the pre-born, we care about people who are already born. And so we're able to do that by partnering with moms like Micah and then Savannah. So now I'm going to just give you an overview of abortion in America. You might already know all of this, but I think it's always good to do a recap. So obviously Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton were decided in 1973. The Supreme Court case, which is Dobbs v. Jackson, deals with the Mississippi ban on abortion at 15 weeks. If they decide that that was a constitutional ban, Roe v. Wade is in trouble, and we could possibly overturn Roe, which is very exciting. Since I've never known a non-Roe world, I don't know if any of you guys were alive before Roe passed, but probably some of you. That sounded really mean. I'm so sorry. I think you're all like 20 years old, so I'm sure none of you are alive for before Roe. But since 1973, over 60 million innocent human beings have been decapitated, disemboweled, dismembered, and discarded since. That's roughly 839,500 per year, 2,300 a day, which comes out to one every 38 seconds. So you can do the math, and the time that we're here, you can do the math as to how many babies will be killed. So this is the largest human rights injustice that our country is facing, which is why I got involved in it, because I realized this isn't okay and this is something that needs to change. One in four women will have an abortion, and four out of every 10 women that have had an abortion claim to be churchgoers when they were getting their abortion. So we know that this isn't just a non-Christian issue. This happens in the church, and there are people in the church who have been affected by this. And so this is something we need to be speaking out about, because we know that not only is abortion wrong, but there's also grace and healing for those who have had abortions. So I think that number for how many said they were in the church at the time of their abortion is a high number, which is why I think it's not something we should ignore. Michigan's numbers in 2020 were 29,669 in the entire state of Michigan. As you can see, Wayne County has the most abortions every year. Last year it was roughly 11,000. And then Oakland and Macomb are obviously way lower than that, but Wayne County almost makes up half of the entire state. So, and then I don't know how many U of M, if you're a Michigan State fan, I am too, I apologize, but everyone knows U of M better. This stadium holds about 107,600 people. If you filled it 8.6 times, that would be how many babies are going to die in our country in 2021. And if you wanted to represent how many babies have died since Roe v. Wade was passed, you would have to fill that stadium to its max capacity 557 times. So I think visual number comparisons are helpful. So once you look at that, it's pretty staggering to look at. We know that the humanity of the preborn is argued, but we also know that their personhood has been argued as well, because some people will grant that they're human, but they're not people. But we know that when personhood of any human being has been argued in our history, bad things have happened. During the civil rights, in the eyes of the law, the slave is not a person. African Americans were not viewed as people. Women, in British common law, were not persons in matters of rights and privileges. And now in Roe v. Wade, the word person does not include the unborn. So we know that in our history, when we deny personhood from different human beings, dangerous things happen, including racism, sexism, and now abortion we consider ageism. So our motto at Create Equal is end ageism and abortion. So we know that abortion is just discriminating against the preborn based on their age. We go by Ephesians 5:11 through 12, which says, take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. We know that images of past injustices in our nation's history or in our world's history has exposed the reality of how bad those injustices were, including the Rwandan genocide, slavery, and the Holocaust. People didn't understand how bad these things were until they saw the reality of it. So I'm going to show you guys a few of the images that we use on outreach on our signs. They're very graphic because abortion is very graphic. So if you choose to look away, that's totally fine with me. There's three of them. I'll let you know when they're not on the screen anymore. But I think it's important when we talk about this issue to know exactly what we're dealing with. So here we go. This is a baby that was dismembered at 8 weeks. This is a baby that was dismembered at 15 weeks. And this is another baby that was dismembered at 15 weeks. So those are some of the images we use on our signs when we go out on outreach. A lot of times those pictures speak for themselves, and I've had people change their, they've come up to me and said, I didn't know that's what it looked like, and they've changed, I haven't even had to say anything to them. They've changed their minds just by being exposed to the reality. And I know I would be naive to assume that maybe some of you have had an abortion or someone close to you has had an abortion, so maybe those pictures are harder for you to look at. And I want you to know that I'm not up here judging anyone. I'm not out here giving condemnation, because one of the best parts of my job is getting to share the beauty of the gospel with people, especially people who have had abortions or someone close to them has, because we know that there's no sin that Christ's blood can't cover. So if you have had one or someone you know has had one, there is hope and healing in that. So my main goal for today is for you guys to know how to have conversations about this, because that's the majority of my job, is talking to people about this. So I'm going to give you guys some hopefully helpful tactics and information, so when this issue comes up in your conversations, you know how to properly defend them. So you have your note. I hope you guys got note sheets. If you want to write down on the outline as I get to the slides, you're more than welcome to. If you'd rather just listen, that's fine. And then I'll take questions at the end, so if you just jot them down, I'll try to save enough time to get to them. I'll just wait a second. All right. So when I have conversations with people, the main thing I focus on is going to be a syllogism. So there's two premises and a conclusion. It's basically what we focus our conversation on, so you can stay glued in on the issue at hand, because, you know, conversations can go down rabbit trails, but the syllogism will help you keep it on topic. So I would say to someone, it's always morally wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. Most people would agree with you, hopefully, on this statement, so that you have something in common already. This is where people get stuck. Elective abortion always intentionally kills an innocent human being. And then the conclusion, therefore, would be elective abortion is always morally wrong. So this is the syllogism that you want to stay focused on when you're having conversations, because this is the importance of this issue. If it's not a human being, then it's not wrong. But if it is, then it has to be wrong. So the first question that you want to ask, or that I would ask someone, are, what are the preborn? This is important, because like I said, if they are human, abortion's murder. If they're not human, I'm infringing on a woman's right to choose what to do with her body. So I would say that they are human beings, and we know that based on embryology. The preborn are distinct. They're separate from their, they're different from their parents. Once the sperm and egg meet, they cease to exist, and this new human being directs its own development. So we know that they're separate. They're not part of the mom's body. They're in the mom's body, but not part of it. They're also living. Dead things don't grow. So if they weren't living, we wouldn't need abortion, because there would be no point. And obviously rocks aren't growing, so only things that are living are growing. So that's obvious. They're whole. They may be smaller than us, but they have everything within themselves to keep growing. They have all of their chromosomes and their DNA. All they need to do is keep developing from there. And they're human. We know that two human parents are always going to have a human. They're never going to have a dog or a cat. So this is kind of, people get caught up on whether or not they're human, and I would just ask them, what species are their parents? Because you would never see a dog having kittens. So it would make logical sense that human beings would procreate and have humans. I mean, we know that the majority of embryologists agree that life begins at fertilization. So if people say that science says it doesn't, they're wrong. These are just two quotes from embryologists from different textbooks. A zygote created at fertilization is the beginning of a new human being. Human development begins at fertilization. And then a doctor from Harvard, it is incorrect to say that biological data cannot be decisive. It is scientifically correct to say that an individual human life begins at conception. So when I'm talking to college students and they call me anti-science, I usually just look at them and say, actually, you're anti-science. I have the science behind what I'm saying. And if you ask them to find an embryologist that says human life doesn't begin at fertilization, they usually can't, because it doesn't really exist. So now we know what they are. This should be proof enough, but a lot of times it's not. I wish it was. I wish I could just tell people, well, they're humans, so shouldn't we just treat them equally? But that's usually not where they get stuck. They may agree with you. So now there's two more questions you're going to want to ask, and this is going to frame the debate. Now, I'm not saying treat your conversation like a debate, but it may feel that way. But we want to be able to clarify. So first, the second question is going to be, are they valuable? And then the third question is going to be, would you kill a born person because of these circumstances? So I'll go into both of these. So we know the preborn are different from born human beings. So we're going to go over their differences. And it's an acronym called SLED. So the S stands for size. The preborn are smaller than us. I think we can all agree with that. But we would say that that's not, that doesn't change their value, because size doesn't determine our value. I'm shorter than pretty much everybody in this room. None of you can just kill me because I'm smaller than you, thankfully. And so this leads to really dangerous conclusions if size did determine our value, because that would mean you could kill me because I'm smaller than you, or you and I could kill babies because they're smaller than us. And most logical human beings that I talk to, I'm like, well, would you kill a newborn because they're smaller than you? Most of them say no. Some of them think it's okay, but that's a whole other conversation. The next difference is our level of development. They say, well, the preborn are less developed than us, so we should be able to kill them because they're not at the same level as us. Well, we continue to develop way through our 20s, so there's a lot of people less developed than me, including toddlers, infants, small children, but I would never say that I should be able to kill any of those people because they're less developed than me. And like I said, most logical people that you talk to will agree with you on this. Our level of development does not change our value. Well, what about their environment? The preborn are in the womb while we're not in the womb. A lot of college students really get caught up on this one. I always say it's not a different universe. The preborn are still on this planet even though they're in the womb, and we know that our environment doesn't change our value. Just because I live in Ohio and I live right by OSU does not make me less valuable than everybody here in Michigan. I'm not an OSU fan, I promise, but that doesn't make me less valuable just because I live in a different state than everyone here. And so the logical conclusion is, if environment mattered, we could kill anybody that doesn't live right where we are or in the same city, even the same zip code. So, very dangerous to think environment determines our value. And then the D is dependency, or degree of dependency. Well, the preborn are dependent on their mothers for everything. Yes, they are. But that doesn't change whether or not they're valuable, because newborns are very dependent on their parents as well. You would never, if I left an infant out by itself, it could not take care of itself. But we don't say that infants are less valuable than us because they need someone else to take care of them. This also leads to more issues when you get to people later in their life when they need someone to take care of them in a nursing home. I know there's people okay with killing elderly people, but I would say that's also wrong, because they're not less valuable than us just because they're more dependent on someone else. And all of us here are dependent on someone. If you have a job, you're dependent on your boss to pay you. If I was in school, I'd be dependent on my teachers to give me a good grade. Like, there's a lot of different things we're dependent on, but that doesn't change whether or not we're valuable. So these are the four basic differences between us and the preborn, and hopefully this makes it clear that none of those differences determine whether or not we're valuable or if someone can kill us. So the application of this would be, since we know that the preborn are human beings from the moment of conception, we can compare them to a born human being in conversation. So what we do is trot out the toddler. So if I'm in a conversation with someone and they say, well, the preborn are smaller than us, so they can die, I would say, well, let's picture that I had a 2-year-old standing here next to me. They're obviously smaller than me. Would you kill them? And most of the time, hopefully, they're going to say no. I've heard it all, though, so sometimes it's not no. But so you may be able to get to this point where, like, okay, our differences don't matter, but there's hard cases. There's hard situations, and in those situations, it should be okay. And so I'm going to just go into those. First one is rape and incest. We hear that one all the time. Well, if a woman's raped, why should she have to carry the baby of her rapist? Now, when it comes to these hard cases, I'm going to go into the conversation wanting to win that person, because a lot of people who bring up rape or incest know someone close to them who's been through that, or they themselves have been through that. So I'm not going to just attack them and say, well, you're wrong. I want them to know that I agree with them. Rape is wrong. Incest is wrong. And that person and me can agree that that is wrong. Why? Because it's violating the rights of another person's body. But I would argue that that baby is not the one who raped that woman. And so while the person and I can agree that the rapist should be punished to the full extent of the law, we would never punish the woman who was raped. That's wrong. And why are we punishing that baby for the crimes of its father when that baby's also an innocent party? These conversations are hard to have. A lot of times what I just said is not satisfactory to people because it doesn't help our sense of justice or our sense of someone's been hurt. But the reality of the matter is the preborn are innocent human beings in the case of rape, and so they should be protected as well as that mother. And then life of the mother comes into play. This one is also very difficult. A lot of times people who bring this one up have been through it or they know someone who's been through it. And so we don't treat this lightly. Dr. Christina Francis, she's a pro-life OBGYN who's the president of an organization of pro-life OBGYNs. And this board of thousands of OBGYNs have agreed that there's no situation where abortion is ever medically necessary. Now, there are ectopic pregnancies where the baby gets implanted in the fallopian tube where it doesn't belong and it can't grow there. But when we go and take that baby out because we know that the mother and the baby are going to die, we're not going in intentionally killing that child. We're going in to save as many people as we can because we're not going to leave that mom to die as well as the baby. So when ectopic pregnancy gets brought up, I don't believe that's abortion because we want to save as many people as we can. We want to do the most good. So that's different than what I'm talking about when it comes to elective abortion. There is no situation where abortion is necessary. Early delivery, C-sections can be necessary, but abortion isn't. If you look up Dr. Christina Francis, you can Google her. She has a website, and they have a lot of scientific evidence on this and a lot of different science-y terms and stuff that I don't know very well. So if you want to look more into that, she's a really good resource. And they try to help moms find pro-life doctors in their area as well when they're pregnant. So she has a really cool organization. So those are the hard cases. So now some tactics. You kind of know the basic overall defense now, hopefully. You may have questions, which is fine. I will hopefully be able to answer those. But these are just some tactics that we on staff at Created Equal want to focus on, just so that our conversations are helpful and that we're able to at least get the person that we're talking to thinking. We may not change their minds in that moment, but we want them to start thinking about this in a more logical way. So you want to ask them good questions. You want to clarify what you're talking about. Because conception and fertilization get talked about as two different things. So when someone says conception, they may mean fertilization. They may mean when the baby implants in the uterus, which is two different things. So you want to ask that person, well, when you say conception, what do you mean? Or when you say human, what do you mean? Like, you want to make sure you're asking these people questions and you're not just spouting off at them, because those conversations never go well. I've made the mistake in some of my conversations where I just get on a roll and the person's just standing there like this and I'm just going. And then they're like, that's not what I was saying at all. And I'm like, awkward. And so then you have to start over from the beginning and ask them questions. So if you start out by asking questions, you don't have to do what I've had to do. You also want to share stories. You want to humanize yourself with the person that you're talking to, because this is a very highly volatile conversation. So I share stories because I want to find what I have in common with the person I'm talking to. I may only talk to them for 20, 30 minutes, but I want to form some sort of relationship with them where we can have a respectful dialogue and we're not just shouting at each other, which also leads to finding common ground. Like I said, with different issues like rape, we know rape is wrong. I can agree with anybody who brings up that issue that rape is wrong, and I would never wish it on anyone. So you want to find those things that you agree with the person on. So maybe they agree that the preborn are human. You can say, hey, me too. Now let's talk about these situations where you think abortion's okay still. And then you want to consider logical conclusions. When we went through SLED, the differences between us and the preborn, I tried to show that there's conclusions when you base value on size and level of development and environment and degree of dependency. There's conclusions from those things that are dangerous, like when you're okay with killing infants and toddlers and elderly people. And so you want to help people realize when their logic is leading to dangerous things like that. Because a lot of times when I'm talking to someone and I tell them, well, you do realize based on your logic that you're okay with infanticide, and they're like, wait, that's not what I wanted to say at all. And so that can be really helpful in your conversations. You're going to have basically four types of conversations. There's people in four different camps. There may be more depending on their worldview, which is like a whole nother conversation. But these are the main types of conversations. So I wanted to share just what I focus on in those conversations, like which part of the acronym I focus on or which part of the syllogism I focus on. So the first group, maybe you know people who are fully pro-abortion. They have no restrictions on it. They think it's okay in any situation at any level of development. They may not believe that the preborn are human. So I would first start with, are the preborn human? I would focus on the fact that, yes, in fact, they are. Embryologists know this. We know that they're living human beings. And so then that leads to, is killing innocent human beings okay? And so you want to get them thinking first, okay, they're humans. So now we humanize them. Now we need to move on to, are they valuable and would you kill a born person for the same reasons? These are some of the harder conversations because they have no restrictions on this, but helping them see their logical conclusions on where infanticide and killing elderly people is okay can be very helpful. You're going to talk to people who are pro-life, but they have exceptions for rape and incest and life of the mother. And so you want to focus on the fact that killing innocent human beings is never okay, and that you can go through things like rape and health of the mother and help them realize that you can't really be pro-life with exceptions. It's not really a thing. And so you want to help them get to the place where they are pro-life with no exceptions. So I would focus more on the value of preborn human beings and how there's no situation where killing an innocent human being is okay. You may talk to people who just don't care. They view this as an issue that's political and they don't want to get involved in politics and this doesn't affect them directly. I would bring up the statistics that I shared. You can pretty much Google these anywhere. Guttmacher is a really good website for statistics. They're a pro-abortion website, but they share pretty honest statistics on numbers of abortions in different areas. And so you want to help people realize that this is not a political issue. Unfortunately, it was made a political issue, but this is a human rights issue. And it's the biggest human rights violation that we're facing. And as fellow human beings, we should be standing up for each other. Proverbs 24:11 says to rescue those who are being taken away to death and hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter. So especially as Christians, we're called to stand up for the abandoned and the orphans and the widows. We're called to stand up for people who are being discriminated against and hurt and killed legally. And so you want to help people who are apathetic realize this. We're called to help our brothers and sisters in need, and the preborn are our younger, smaller neighbors who have no voice for themselves. So that's something I would focus on with people who are more apathetic. And then the last group is people who are post-abortive. Either they themselves are post-abortive or someone they know close to them is post-abortive. And so when it comes to this camp, I'm going to focus more on the person that I'm talking to rather than my arguments. In these conversations, I take a step back. I don't automatically go into, well, abortion is wrong and yada, yada, yada for all these reasons. I want to win that person's heart in that situation because I know that abortion hurts women. I know that abortion hurts men. I know abortion hurts. And so I want to reach that person with the gospel by saying, yes, I would say what you did was wrong, but I do know that the grace of Jesus is so much greater than what you did. And so what you want to focus on with that person is like asking them, how are you doing? I always tell people when they say, well, I had one this many years ago, I say, I'm sorry you went through that. I'm sorry that you felt like you had to do that. And how are you doing now? I mean, I talk to a lot of post-abortive parents 30 years down the road, and they're still hurting. They still cry about it. And so I'm able to just take a step back from my position on this and ask them, how are you doing? And then I get to share the beauty of the gospel, which is what we should always want to do in any conversation with anyone. And so getting to take a step back and say, you know, what you did was wrong and I know you're hurting, but here's the good news. There's someone who's so much greater than you. There's someone who died for you and who died for that specific sin. And that sin of abortion isn't bigger than that. Nothing I've done is smaller than that sin. That sin is just as great as any of the sins I've committed. And you can be forgiven from that and find hope and healing and move past that. So those are the four camps of conversations you'll have. You probably know someone who's in pretty much all of these camps. And so that leads me to the end. Here's some resources that I recommend for people. The Culture War by Jonathan Van Maren is a really cool pro-life apologist. I'm pretty sure he's from Canada. But culture war kind of just focuses on the fact that our culture is a culture of death right now, and that's what we're facing, and it's how to engage our culture as Christians and as being pro-life. Scott Klusendorf's The Case for Life is a really good beginner resource. Basically, everything I talked about now is in that book and in greater depth. So if you're newer to this, that's a really good place to start. Seeing is Believing is also by Jonathan Van Meeren. He is basically giving a case why our culture needs to see the victims of abortion. So those pictures I showed you before, you might have an issue with them. They probably make you uncomfortable. I hope they make you uncomfortable because that's the reality of it. But he kind of gives a really good case as to why those pictures are necessary. And we've seen minds change because of it. And then Love Unleashes Life. Stephanie Gray is a really sweet pro-life apologist. She wrote that book, and it's about reaching people's hearts and not just their heads. So we don't want to just reach people's heads with common knowledge. We want to be able to reach that person's heart. So she does a really good job in her book. She's a really easy author to read. So that's also a good book to read. And with that, I'll take questions. Yes.
In the last, I think, 5 years or so, we've seen a lot more of people being proud that they've had an abortion. Oprah Winfrey did this thing. Do you run into that? And then deal with that, like, oh, I've had an abortion, I'm not sorry, you know?
Yeah. Usually people who say that are lying. We deal with a lot of very vocal pro-abortion people who are very, they like to say they're proud, but we know that they're hurting just because of how they're acting. And in those situations, it's really hard to talk to those people, but you really want to reach that person's heart and say, like, I know you're not okay. And it's okay not to be okay. The culture, unfortunately, has this thing where it's like, oh, let's be proud of this, but we know that it's because deep down they're hurting. I've talked to people like that, but the majority of the people I had talked to, abortion hurts them. It's not something that they can just ignore. They know something is wrong with it, and that's why they are championing it like that. I run across it, and a lot of times it's hard because those people don't really want to have a heart-to-heart conversation, but I do want to focus on maybe you don't feel like you're hurting now, but I want you to know that maybe later on you realize what you did, maybe later on you realize that you are hurting, and I want you to know the truth of the gospel. Like, I want you to know that you can be forgiven from it. So that's basically where I go with those conversations. A lot of times I don't get them to admit it to me right there in that moment, but I do want them to think. Because sometimes maybe they really think what they did wasn't wrong. And so then I'll go into why abortion is wrong and why it hurts women. And so then I obviously always share the gospel with them too. But, yes.
Is this deck of slides available?
Yes. Where? I can send it to you. I can get your email after and send it to you. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I can send you like my extended notes on every slide instead of just the slides because I have like notes written down for each one and then you can have all of that.
Yeah, that
would
be
good. Yes.
I have heard that 83% of people, that 83% of women who see the ultrasound decide not to have the abortion.
Yeah.
So that obviously is the most effective tool.
Yeah.
Why isn't that being done, like in Planned Parenthood, my naivety to that.
Yeah.
But why isn't that more prominent done? Because is that not part of the agenda when it goes there?
Yeah, it works.
For that, or is that something that is something by law? Is it a state-by-state issue? Is it a federal issue?
Yeah. I think it's state-by-state now for whether or not they have to show the ultrasound, and most clinics don't want to because, like you said, it is very effective. And so they turn the screen away from women going in because they don't want them to see it. Sometimes they'll request it. We've talked to women who they requested it, but Planned Parenthood refused. Just the one by our place, they refused to show it to them. They just turn the screen away and don't let them see it. But it is one of the most effective things. Like the two moms that I showed, both of them went to the pregnancy care center, saw their ultrasound, heard the heartbeat, and that's what changed their minds ultimately. So
I know that it works.
Yes, okay. Planned Parenthood. And the Planned Parenthood near Columbus, actually very exciting, they're very low on business. They're struggling to find a new abortionist, so their business, they're closed almost completely every other week.
I know so in my life that I love dearly, and when she's seen the ultrasound, she changed her mind.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
We're pretty much out of time, so let's do one more question. Brad.
Maria, you're a missionary down at a camp in that area. How do we get behind you?
I can add you to my email list, so if you just give me your email, I'll add you to, or you can give it to Mike, and Mike can just email me all the emails. That's even easier. And I'll add you to my monthly newsletter that I send every month, and then that kind of just gives you updates in different ways. So.
Good.
Was this great or what?
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to pray for Marina, and then we'll be dismissed because we're a little over.